I'm really excited to share today's episode with you. In it, I'm sitting down with my friend, life coach Jamie Andelin, and we are discussing a myriad of topics, including how to not keep score in your marriage, all about sex, and how to show up exactly the way you want to show up in your marriage. Even though it went a little bit long, I couldn't cut any of it out. So without further ado, please enjoy my chat with Jamie Andelin. Hello, and welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm super excited for my guest today. She is a life coach, and I have been following her for a long time, and we decided to do something super fun today where we are interviewing each other for each other's podcasts. So basically, we came up with a bunch of questions we wanted to ask each other, and we're just going to ask each other in no particular order, and you get to listen in on our conversation. So I'm excited for my chat with Jamie Andelin today. How are you doing, Jamie?
Oh my goodness. I am just so happy to be here. Thank you for having me here. And well, thank you for coming for me too.
Of course. I think this is going to be so much fun. It's just like talking to a friend. So tell my listeners a little bit about yourself and your family, and then tell us how you got started as a life coach.
That sounds great. Okay. So I am a mom. I have 4 kids. Most of them are teenagers now. I've been married for almost 18 years. I kind of feel like that gives me some kind of credibility. I'm a life coach for those who are teachable and curious. They have a great sense of humor. These are my clients. This is like what I love about them. They have a great sense of humor. They are ready to take action in their lives, yet they have this dark side to their gifts. They don't see how extraordinary they truly are. And they're letting the opinion of others and cultural ideas and rules determine all their decisions. So they may feel really busy a lot of the time and then forget to slow down and see what's really important and to take the time to do what fills them. I got started as a life coach. So I believed that I didn't deserve my dreams or what I really wanted my life to be. So I kept telling myself that if I was just more grateful or more righteous, then I would be happier. I made a lot of my decisions based off of what I thought other people wanted me to do with my life. And I kind of became intimidated to do what I actually really wanted to do with my life. And I felt busy and burnt out most of the time because of this and kind of lost my purpose. So 7 years ago, I went to a workshop where my perspective on life totally changed. I felt like Ebenezer Scrooge because you know how like in one night he totally changes? That's what happened for me. It was just in that workshop and everything changed for me. And I hired a coach and I applied everything to my life that she was teaching me. And now here I am helping others and mostly people who are in similar situations that I was in.
What a cool story. And as I was listening to you, I'm like, I think so many of us can relate. I mean, that's not like a super unique. I mean, it's your story and it's an awesome right. story, but it's not super unique. I think there's tons of women that feel that all the time.
Yep. It's very common. And I always like to reassure people how normal they are. There's nothing wrong with them. Very normal. And now you get to have some help and guidance and it's amazing.
I love that.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite subject to coach around and what topic do you feel like your clients need the most coaching about?
Well, my favorite subject to coach around is relationships. But I really truly believe that anything that we have thoughts about, we have a relationship with. So I love coaching people on the stories, which are their thoughts that they have about every relationship they have, like money, their spouse, themselves, their children, church, their job. Like if you can think about it, then you have a relationship with it. And this is what I love to help people with. The topic that my clients need the most coaching on is probably emotional adulthood. And what I mean by this is emotional adulthood is taking responsibility for our own emotions and not putting our emotions in the hands of other people or other things like our circumstances or our situations in life. And this almost always leads into coaching people on people pleasing. So not doing things or doing things because the fear of what others think of them or may not think of them.
Interesting. I think those are all great topics, and we all have relationships with all kinds of things. So it's interesting to point that out, that you have a relationship with anything that you can think about. And what's so fun about that is we have an infinite number of choices about how we want to think about those relationships in any given circumstance.
It's very true, which makes me want to ask you a few questions.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay. Because right now I feel like on your podcast, like I love your podcast. Some of my favorite episodes have dealt with, because you do interviews all the time. So I really loved when you were interviewing Ginger Z. I love her. And I loved her on Dancing with the Stars. And when that's how I found you actually was you were saying like, I interviewed Ginger Z and I was like, what? So that was really good. And I like one of the most latest episodes was like The Last Bad Day.
Oh yes. Michael O'Brien is so great.
Yeah. That was like, I was walking through Costco listening to that and like had to stop and just like stand in the aisle and listen because I was like so into it. It was really cool. I just love the perspective on that. But now I see that you're kind of moving into this direction. I don't know if it's going to last like a long time, but marriage, like focusing a lot on marriage. So that's exciting.
Yes, I love marriage. Actually, I'm kind of finishing up my focus on marriage. We're just about to re-release the Marriage Summit, which is going to be so fantastic. I took all of the feedback from everyone who went through it the first time and I incorporated it all. And now I'm releasing this new and improved version of the Epic Marriage Summit. So I'm super excited. And then once we re-release that, we're going to totally shift gears and we're going to start talking about health,
physical, oh, that's so fun.
Emotional, and mental health, which is near and dear to my heart too. So,
well, they all go together, right?
Absolutely. For
sure. That's so fun. So one of the first questions I wanted to ask you is, this is what comes up a lot with my friends and clients, and I'm sure you've heard this a lot too, but how do you not get resentful when you're working on your marriage and your spouse isn't?
Okay. Well, this is a great question. The first thing I would say is, how do you know your spouse isn't working on your marriage? Like, it absolutely could be in a way that you just don't recognize. So that is a possibility. You could get curious about that. Like, maybe my spouse shows love differently. Maybe my spouse works on things differently. Maybe he does care just as much as I do, but shows it or lives it differently. So I would first ask yourself, how do I know that my spouse isn't working on our marriage? Maybe they are.
I love that.
And then I would get real clear about the fact that you have all the power to create the experiences in your life however you want, and they don't even have to be involved. Like, your spouse's only job is to be exactly themselves, and your job is to create the experience in your life the way you want it to be. So you can be working on your marriage and the experience you're having in your marriage, and they don't have to be involved at all. And the fantastic thing about this, and you teach people how to do this, I know you do because I've heard you talk about it, is you can write the story any way you want. So I would first get a real clear picture about, I am in control of my own story. I'm the one who dictates how this is going to go. And so I would start with a good thought download. I would write down all of the feelings and thoughts you're having about how hard you're working and maybe your spouse isn't. And then I would give that story a headline. And then I would look at it and say, is this story and this headline something that I'm super excited to be a part of? And is it making me show up in my life and in my marriage the way I want to? And if it's not, if the answer to any of those questions is no, then I would just get busy rewriting it. And I would say, you know what? I am going to commit myself to working on this marriage and showing up as the person I want to be in this marriage, regardless of what my spouse does. And I'm going to figure out a way to have a great experience with them being exactly the way that they are.
That is amazing. My mind is already going off into like, this is going to be so fun. I want to write my story and then figure out what the headline is.
Yeah.
Like the title of my story. If I had a title to the story of my marriage, what would it be?
Yeah. And the great thing about that is you have 100% control of that. You can write it any any way you want. I mean, you can go with the Star tabloid version of it. You can go with like People magazine version of it. You can go with the New York Times version of it. Like however you want to look at that story and be like, I am proud to be the heroine of that story. That's how you should write it.
Oh my goodness. That is so good. Thank you so much. That is going to give me, and I'm sure lots of people, something to think about today. So here's what comes up for me when you're talking to is, what if you feel like you're doing all this work and you feel like your spouse isn't, and you really, truly, really believe that, then how do you avoid scorekeeping?
Yeah, that's a great question. I almost kind of want to throw that back at you. Like, what do you think? Is keeping score serving you? Like, I think I would just get really curious. Like, why do I feel like I need to keep score? Is this a game? Am I part of a game? Is that how I want to write my story? Like, where there's a hero and there's a villain, and the hero is just busy working themselves into a frenzy to make this a fantastic marriage. And then there's this villain who's going around anti. Or is this like a team effort and we do things together and we work together? And I always go to soccer as my game of choice because that's what I played, right? Is the role of the goalkeeper different from the role of the forward? Of course. Is the goalkeeper acting like a goalkeeper? Sure. Is the forward acting like a forward? Yes. And we just had the state soccer tournament and the goalkeeper was the absolute hero of the story because the state game went into PKs and the goalkeeper absolutely saved the game and they ended up winning because of this goalkeeper's heroic save, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's going to be moments like that, but then there are other games where the forward scores all these goals and they don't have to go into PKs. And, you know, our life and our marriage is just kind of like that. There's going to be different plays, different games. And are we on a team and we have different roles and we work together to come up with the win? Or are we going to expect everyone on the team to play the same role and then keep score about who's doing it better? I mean, I don't know. How do you want that story to play out?
Well, I have a story that I was reminded of while you were talking. My husband became a police officer for the very first time. The schedule and everything was totally different than what I expected. And we are really religious and we go to church every Sunday. And so a lot of my listeners are too. And so, you know, there's this big idea around keeping the Sabbath day holy and things we do on the Sabbath day and don't do on the Sabbath day. And he had gone almost a year without going to church. And it was getting really hard for me to take my young children to church, to be there by myself. And then him missing out, honestly, on a spiritual experience every Sunday. And I started telling him, you're not doing this right. You're not as spiritual as I thought you should be. Like when I married you, this is why I married you, because I thought we would have this spiritual relationship, this spiritual connection. And it's not what I thought it would be. And he just said to me, you know what? I'm not here to keep score with you. Who's being more spiritual than the other? Right now, I need you to be my crutch. If you could just be that for me and hold this family together for a little while, I know we'll figure it out. And that just hit my heart, like wanted to burst out of my chest. And I was like, you're right. And then he said to me, there may be a time in our marriage where I'm going to need to be your crutch. And you're going to really hope that you were mine during that time, because it's like we want to be able to give and serve and help each other. So I did. In that moment, I just said, okay, I'm the crutch. And those are just the words we used, but I'm sure many people have some examples of this in their life. And that really got me through that time. And I started thinking to myself, I have no idea on his own individual personal journey, however you want to call it, this may be all for his good right now. This may be strengthening him spiritually. I have no idea. It's all up to him to use his experiences to be strengthened if he wants to. But who do I want to be? I want to be supportive and loving. And it worked out perfect because then, I mean, I had terrible pregnancies. I was so sick. And whenever I was pregnant, he would practically take over for our family for 9 months. And he became my crutch. He became my support during those times. And so, like you said, it's just kind of this, why do we want to keep score? Why? Is that who you want to be? Maybe not.
Yeah. I think, like you said, like you mentioned, being married for 18 years, I'm sure have gone through periods of time in your marriage where both of you, one of you has had to do more than the other. That's just kind of the way life goes. You know, it's kind of cyclical. I know for me, every fall since my second child was born, I have this extreme anxiety that keeps me from doing all all of the things that I'm used to doing. But when I'm not experiencing that, I am like, you know, Johnny on the spot, do everything, right? And so we've both had our opportunities to go back and forth doing more or taking on more responsibility. And so keeping score doesn't serve me in any way, shape, or form. And so I think a good question to ask yourself is, why am I keeping score? Why would I want to keep score? And is that serving me at all? Does that make me show up as a team player, as someone who's ready to pitch in and do what it needs to be done right now? Or is it making me frustrated and grumpy and not wanting to give my best?
Yeah, those are good questions. I always like to ask, who do I want to be? Do I want to be the kind of person that's waiting for other people to do certain things so that I can feel confident or so I can feel happy? No, I just want to do nice things because I just want to be somebody who does nice things. Yeah. I want to be somebody who just helps and supports people, even if nobody helps and supports me. And I can be that way in my marriage too.
Totally. I love it.
Yeah. So how do you build a strong marriage? How do you build a marriage that is a strong example for your children?
Great question. I think you figure out what you want to exemplify for your children and then make your marriage that way. So I want to show my kids that being married is so much fun. You know, actually, I think I can bring this all around in a parenting story. So I remember I had two kids and my husband came home after work one day and I was underneath like the island in our kitchen and I was picking up crusty macaroni and cheese. It wasn't even crusty. It was still goopy. So I couldn't sweep it. Like I was actually on my hands and knees picking up the mac and cheese that had been flung onto the floor by my children. And I remember feeling so sorry for myself. I was just like, I can't believe I went to college and I got these great grades and I am accomplished and this is my life. Like I just could not believe it. I was having the biggest pity party for myself under that island. And I remember my husband came home and he's like, how was your day? And I was like, how does it look like it? You know, I was just like grumpy and mean. And I was just like, I'm cleaning up crusty macaroni and cheese from the kitchen floor. I mean, how do you think my day went? Right. And he was like, oh, it seems like that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing at this phase in your life. And I went like, I really had to take and think about that for a very long time. And I remember asking later at night, just being like really grumpy. Like we'd put the kids to bed and I'm like laying in bed with my arms crossed, just like mad. And he's like, I don't understand. Like, why are you so mad? And I was like, how on earth is cleaning up macaroni and cheese from the floor what I'm supposed to be doing right now? And he's like, well, I suppose you could be doing anything you want right now. You could have a really fancy job in New York on Wall Street. I mean, you really could be doing anything right now. You are capable of anything, but you chose to have these kids and these kids eat mac and cheese and they throw it on the floor. And so your job right now is to clean up after them. And you chose that. And I went, ugh. You're right. I did. And he was like, so what do you want to model for your kids about that choice? And I went, I suppose I want to show them that I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for their choice and that I'm actually having fun being their mom. And so from that point forward, I just kind of made the choice that I wanted to model for my kid that motherhood was fun, that it meant dancing in the kitchen, that it meant enjoying all the different phases of their lives. And so I would say the same thing about marriage. Like you chose to be in this marriage. What do you want to show your kids about it? I love to attack my husband when he gets home and just give him kisses and like push him into the pantry and make out with him while my kids are sitting in the kitchen and they're like, ew, mom, gross, stop, right? But I'm like, no, we can't keep our hands off each other. We still love each other. 18 years later, he's my favorite person to walk through the door. I love seeing him. I love snuggling him. I love smooching him. In fact, when we put the kids to bed and then we like snuggle in bed and like have our alone time, they'll like come barging in like, hey, you know, whatever, I'm hungry or something. And they see us snuggling and they're like, guys, gross, get a room. You know, they're all teenagers now. And so they say things like, get a room, right? And we're like, hey, this is our time, right?
We did get a room.
Exactly. This is our room in our house. And this is how we're choosing to spend our time. And so if you don't like it, get out of our room. Right?
You go get a different room.
Totally. And so that's what I want to model for my kids, that, you know, you can be married for however long you're married and you can still love each other. You can still enjoy each other. And it is work, but it can be so fun. And being married to my husband is like the coolest, funnest, most awesome thing that I've ever done. And I hope to keep it that way. And so that's what I want my kids to to see that being married is so, so, so much fun.
That is so funny. It reminds me of a friend I have that announces to her children, if you come in my room, well, after it's time for bed and me and your dad have gone in there, I just want you to know that we will be laying on the bed naked. And so if you come in, that is what you will see. He's like, but then you have to actually do it, because if they walk in, they're going to see you naked and then they'll believe you forever. And then they'll start knocking before they come in. That's a great. And your husband sounds like a really awesome person. I'd love to talk to you, because he doesn't let you argue with your reality. He's like, it looks like your reality is exactly what you chose, which is such a huge tool that I use for my clients to just name the facts. This is what it is. Life is what it is. You chose it. You're here. And that relieves a lot of suffering when you can just accept what your reality is. And then the next step is, can I love it? Can I love my reality?
I love that, because life is a series of choices, and you know, we get to live the consequences of our choices every day. And that is so important. Can we love it? It was our choice. So we can either love it or we can hate it. Which one's more fun?
Oh my goodness. And I've had this experience lately, and I know I've fallen into this trap in my past where I will complain about my husband and just things like that. And I'll be around other women who are complaining about their husband. Where my mind goes now is not, oh my goodness, like, you have it so hard. I'm so sorry for you. My mind starts saying, then why did you marry him? And what does this say about you? I know that may not sound very nice to people, but I'm like, if he's such a terrible person, then why did you choose him?
Yeah.
And I really do think that's such a good question to ask yourself. Like, if you think your spouse is just this terrible person, then why did you marry them? What does that say about you that you would choose someone so horrible to marry? And then it kind of makes you take a step back, because you're like, wait a second, I'm not a terrible person. So maybe I didn't choose a terrible person, and maybe we can move through this.
Yeah. And maybe I should change my story.
Or maybe I should change my story about my spouse.
Just to make myself look better.
Yeah. If nothing else. Like, your only reason, it will make you look so much better if your story about your spouse is awesome.
Right, exactly.
Let's start there. Let's just worry about how we look first. Okay, since we talked about being naked, yeah. Can we talk about sex for a minute?
For sure, my favorite topic for sure.
Okay, so I've had this question from several people, and this is like pretty much in a nutshell what they said. I know that this leads to more problems, but I do not want to have sex when we are having problems. Some advice in this department would be appreciated.
Okay. Oh, there's so much here to unpack.
Right?
So I think one of my favorite things that I learned about sex recently is that, and I think it helps when, especially in our culture, when we think we married this total carnal man who only thinks about sex, right? I think that's a really common sort of thought. And I learned this from the Dennings in the Marriage Summit. And it was the first time I'd ever thought about this like this, but men need sex kind of like women need connection and conversation. Like, it's the same thing for them. So how would you feel if your husband just stopped talking to you, didn't want to converse with you anymore? Think about how you would feel if you just wanted to have a conversation with your husband. Like, you just wanted a little bit of validation. You just wanted somebody to listen. You just needed to unload. And your husband was like, not doing it. Nope, not interested. Right? For like days or weeks at a time, you would feel horrible. I know I would feel horrible, because I love having conversations with my husband. And so sex is like that for most men. They just need it. That's their way of connecting, of feeling validated, of feeling wanted and appreciated, and all of those feelings that for women comes into like a conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Now, remember that we can have conversations with anyone. Like, if I'm not getting good conversation from my husband, I can call you or another girlfriend or whatever. But our husbands can't rely on anyone else to meet that need. But you,
well, they could, but they don't want to.
Well, they may want to, but you probably don't want them to.
That's a good point. They want you.
Yes, they do. They chose you and they committed to you. And so that need that they have needs to be fulfilled by you. And that's really a lot of power and kind of a lot of responsibility to put on yourself. But in a time when I'm like, oh, I'm tired, or I'm just not feeling it, or why does he always want to have sex with me? When I start to kind of spiral into those types of thoughts, I remind remind myself that he wants to have a conversation with me. He wants to feel love from me, and this is how he feels it, and he can't get it anywhere else but from me. So again, how do I want to show up in this situation? So another thing I learned in our marriage was, so this is kind of funny because when we first got married, my husband never apologized. We would get in these knockdown, drag out fights, and I would always be the one to be like, I'm sorry we fought, I'm sorry you're upset, I'm sorry, what can I do, right? And he would never apologize. And after a year or so, I was like, I just married a man who never apologizes. I don't know, I guess I just have to come to terms with that fact. He just doesn't apologize, right? And then I learned that if I was patient, if I didn't press the issue, if I gave him kind of some space to think about it, he always came and apologized, even if it totally wasn't his fault, even if it was 100% me being retarded. If I gave him that space to kind of process and go through it, he always came to me with an apology. And so that was kind of his need when we argued or fought or disagreed. He needed a little bit of time. Like, I'm kind of like a switch. I'm like, I'm ready to stop fighting. Let's make up, right? And he's not like that. He's like, I need to just process this and spend some time. And I'm not like a switch. He's like real slow. But once he decides that he's ready to be done, he can come and apologize. And so I wasn't giving him that opportunity. And so when you're having problems, like, oh, it's really hard to have sex when I'm having problems, right? Mm-hmm. But, and we know that it makes it worse, probably. But when our needs are being met emotionally, physically, mentally, it's a lot easier to think clearly about any situation that we're in. And so I think if we remember that sex is a need, I mean, it really is. I don't know why God made us so different, men and women, but he did. And men need sex. They just do. And so if you can kind of separate yourself a little bit from the fact that, like, I don't want to have sex, I'm mad at you. If you can just separate yourself and be like, maybe he needs this and I have the ability to give it to him, then maybe he'll be able to see this from a different perspective, or maybe he'll be more willing to give in to what I'm asking for, or maybe he'll just feel more romantic or more willing to do the dishes or whatever it is you're feeling like the problem is. If you are conscious of his needs and how maybe meeting his needs might help him come over to your side a little more, you're probably going to get more of what you want by virtue of being willing to meet his needs.
And being humans. Yeah. There are a couple things came to my mind while you were sharing those experiences. The interesting thing is almost half of my clients right now, the woman in the relationship has the stronger sexual desire than the man. Well, isn't that awesome. Interesting? Yeah. So I know I'm like so jealous. I'm like, that is so cool. And so getting that perspective, it almost doesn't really matter. I've almost stopped using this with my clients. The man needs this and woman needs this. I'm just like, one of you needs sex more than the other. That will just be the way it is. In every marriage, I really do believe there's a higher desire sexual partner and a lower desire. And sometimes it's the man and sometimes it's the woman. They're totally interchangeable, but everything that you said could go either way. You know, if you're the woman and you have a higher sexual desire than your spouse, then, you know, you can totally relate with that. Like, I just want to have sex. Even though I'm mad, I can still have sex with you, and vice versa. Like, I can still talk to you even though I'm mad at you, and
yeah,
all the things. It's
sure. And there's different kinds of sex. Like, you can have angry sex and you can have like stare into each other's eyes because you're the best thing that ever happened to me kind of sex. Or you could just have like quickie sex, right? I mean, any of those things are possible. And maybe you just need to communicate better. Like, right now I'm really angry and I just need to have angry sex.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And one of the thoughts that helps me too is back to like, who do I want to be? So I've really decided, I've made this commitment to myself that my husband wanting something is a good enough reason for me to do it. He doesn't need any other reason. We could be totally upset with each other, and if he wants to have sex, I'm like, that's a good enough reason for me. I haven't always been like that, but it's great. And that works vice versa, because if I'm willing to help him get what he needs and wants, it's a good enough reason for me. Eventually, that's kind of what starts happening for him. And I just have to tell him, I can't explain it. I just need to go to Disneyland. And he's on top of it. He tries to give me what I want. I can't explain it. All the kids need brand new winter clothes. And I know that we have thrift stores and I know that you have stuff we could pass down, but it doesn't matter. I just need them to have new winter clothes. And he's like, all right, good enough reason. Let's do it. And I think that that's really helped our marriage to be a little stronger.
I absolutely love that. I mean, that's like, I love love that so much. And it also goes back to the whole idea of like, I feel like I'm working really hard on this and he's not, or my partner's not, right? It goes back to the same, like, it's going to be reciprocated eventually. I mean,
eventually it is.
No human being, unless they're sociopath, can sit idly by and do nothing and watch their spouse make crazy strides and efforts in any area. Eventually they're going to be like, hey, this looks like it's working for you. Maybe I'll jump in too, you know? And so just remember that no effort in any area is ever going to go completely unnoticed and unreciprocated.
I agree with you. And that's, I love that because that's just a thought, really. It's going to be reciprocated eventually. That really is just a thought. But how do you show up if you really believe that? You probably show up differently and you're probably doing nice things and you're probably helping and supporting your spouse. If you truly believe that a good human, which is who you married because you're awesome, then eventually everything will work out. Everything does. And I just think if you believe that, you show up totally different. It's amazing.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, I remember on one of your episodes, and I don't remember which one, it was towards the beginning of your podcast, maybe episode 10 or something like that. But you talked about how you and your husband prayed together every night. So I am curious, what do you believe or what do you have to think in order to take that action to pray with your spouse every night?
Well, I think you have to believe that it's worth it and worth the effort. And that's it, right? So there's definitely been times in our marriage where like one of us is exhausted and ready to go to sleep and the other one's, you know, needs to pray or whatever. And I can think of specific times where I've been like, I'm too tired. I'm not going to get on my knees. And he'll just kind of touch some part of my body while he prays, right? Or vice versa. So it doesn't always have to be like this mechanical, you know, we're both kneeling and we're both, again, sometimes it can just be, I think there's great strength in your spouse hearing your prayers. And so, you know, if he's already asleep for some reason and I come in, you know, maybe he's hearing what I'm praying for or whatever, or just the act of knowing that I care enough about you and our relationship to involve a higher power in it. And that's enough. So even if your spouse is totally dead set against praying, be like, hey, it's cool if you don't want to pray. I'm just going to be right here next to you. I might hold your hand or touch your shoulder or something, and I'm going to pray because it's worth it to me. And I have faith that bringing a higher power into our marriage is going to help. And so, you know, even if he's mad or is tired or just doesn't feel like it, you can still pray.
I love that. Your thought, I love you too much to not involve a higher power. What an awesome thought that leads to prayer. Amazing. And I love that you talk about it not having to be mechanical, because I cannot tell you how many nights me and my husband have laid in bed and then like we can tell that we're about to fall asleep and one of us will say, let's pray. And we literally just stay in our positions. And sometimes we're holding pinkies. Sometimes I have my hand on his head. I don't know. It's just like, we kind of just like reach our arms over and we're just touching each other somewhere. He'd probably love to just have his hand on my boob, but like, but I'm like, whatever. It counts.
I'm certain God can still hear that.
He does.
He's certain.
Yeah. And we're so human, right? It's so good to just love your humanness and be like, yeah, I'm just going to lay here. And like you said, even if I'm the only one praying, we're still praying and it's amazing. It's working. I believe it's working.
And that's all that matters.
Oh, I have something. So I have some client that they're investing in coaching for themselves, or people who have invested in counseling before in the past. And they've been working for a certain number of months on their marriage. They feel like by themselves going to coaching or getting counseling, and their spouse is totally disinterested in being involved in that. So what can they do in this situation?
Again, I think that's almost like keeping score. Like, I'm willing to work on this and you're not, therefore I am more valuable. I mean, whatever that thought that is, I think you just have to ask yourself, is this thought serving me? Am I getting everything I should be getting out of counseling or coaching if I'm thinking this? Probably not. I think the purpose of coaching and or counseling is to realize that you have all the power to create the experience in your life, and that your unmet expectations or what you think your spouse is or isn't doing isn't really serving you. So once you release them from the expectation to participate in therapy or to be actively working on the marriage or whatever it is you feel like they need to be doing, once you release them of that expectation, I feel like it opens you up to all kinds of creative ways to get your needs met that don't involve them, right? So if you're really really upset because you've been working on your marriage for months and nothing seems to be getting better. What need isn't being met for you? And how can you maybe get that need met? Can you ask them point blank outside of therapy, outside of coaching, like, hey, I really just need to hear you tell me that you love me every night before we go to bed. That's a need I have that's not being met. Could you do that for me? And even if they say no, go ask your teenager or go ask your three-year-old. Like, can you just tell mommy that you love her every night before you go to bed? You'll start to think of creative ways to get those needs met once you release your spouse from having to do all of the work.
Oh, when you were saying that, I just felt like exhaling, like releasing them from the work. You obviously have some things you want to work on in your marriage, and so you're going to counseling.
Those
and
are your expectations and your needs that need to be met. And there's hundreds of thousands of infinite ways to get those needs met. And as soon as you release them from the expectation that they need to meet your needs, which is a classically, I think, flawed view of therapy. But once you realize I'm in control of my life, I can meet my needs. I don't need anyone to meet my needs for me. I just need to find a different way to meet them. Maybe he's involved and maybe he's not.
Sometimes this is bad news for my clients because they're like, what? I have to meet my own needs? This sounds horrible. This is the worst. It's so much easier for somebody else to do it. What do you have to say on that?
No, I'm like, this is great news. Are you kidding me? It's like, here's your power back. You've been giving it away for so long. You've been waiting for somebody else to meet your needs for so long, but here's the great news. Here's your power back. You don't have to wait for anyone to do anything anymore for you to be happy. You can be happy all on your own.
Such good news.
Such good news. It's amazing news.
And then what also happens to me is I'm like, wait, so I don't even have to fix this problem if I don't want to. If I'm the one that's creating the problem, if I have to meet my own needs, then I don't even have to meet them if I don't want to, or I can if I want to. It's like so many options are available to me. When you just think that it's your spouse's job, it's like it becomes this thing that just you feel like has to happen. They have to take me on a certain number of dates. We have to have sex a certain amount of time. No, actually, if you're the one in charge of meeting those needs, sometimes what happens is you relinquish that power and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I don't really care if that needs met or not.
Yeah, I learned this from Natalie Clay,
who I love,
where you ask yourself, what if this wasn't even a problem?
What if it's not a problem anymore?
Yeah.
I love to create problems for myself sometimes. So asking myself that question is so freeing. Like, wait, what if this isn't a problem? Oh, it's not. Okay, moving on.
And that's the great thing, because if you want to feel like it's a problem for a little while, go for it. And then when you're ready to be done, you can just say, what if I'm done? And this isn't a problem anymore.
Yes, good. What if I'm done? I love that. So good.
Yeah. So I have a question for you now. I want to know what in 18 years of being married, what is the biggest challenge you've had to face?
Okay. Our biggest challenge is what seems like our completely opposite parenting styles. Sometimes I really do think that my husband should just do what I say and then we would be so much happier. I'm like, just agree with my ways and we will make it through this, babe. And he's like, Jamie, I only like 50% of what you're saying. Usually most of the time. And my style is, let's have fun and let's be laid back and not care so much and let's play more and spend all of our money on Disneyland. And then he's like, we need to be strict and not allow anything and don't even buy winter clothes for our kids because they're entitled and they always get what they want because you spoil them. So it's like, that's probably our biggest challenge, is just parenting children with two completely different styles of parenting.
Again, probably super, super common.
Yes.
Now, what is the greatest blessing that has come from this challenge?
I would say that the first thing is we have learned to find humor in any situation because we tease each other all the time. It's just expected that if I want to do something, he won't want to do something. It's just kind of what we've learned to live with. Kind of like what your husband would say is just accept the reality. The reality is me and my husband are going to have two completely opposite views on how we should parent our kids. So we have this, of course you think that, and we tease each other. And if we ever do agree on something, we pretty much just have a party because we don't even remember what we agreed on, but we both agreed. So that's celebrating. Also, we don't stay upset with each other. for very long at all, because I think because of that, we just have learned to kind of accept how different we are. And we both take full responsibility for our own emotions. And I can honestly see that we could both be wrong and we could both be right. Right? And there really is no one way to parent, even though I truly sometimes feel that I am right and he is wrong. And then he would probably say that he is right and I am wrong. But honestly, we do know that there is not one way. So, and then I think that it's possible, maybe, that we balance each other out. And it could be possible, maybe, that our children are actually perfectly balanced and amazing because of this. So, I don't know.
I think that's absolutely possible. I think that's more than possible. I think that's probable, actually.
Yeah, maybe. I'm playing around with that possibility, and it feels really good to me to think that, oh, maybe this is actually the way it's supposed to be, because it is actually what's happening.
Yeah, I love that you have different roles and you have different opinions, and that you've learned to parent and maneuver in that experience. I mean, that's okay.
Yeah, and I think we truly both have always believed this thought that we will work through anything. And that belief, like, how do you show up? If you're believing that it maybe it's not possible, that you can't fix this, that you're stuck, compared to we always work it out, we'll always move forward. I show up completely different in my marriage when I know that eventually all of our problems are going to be fixed. We really do fix them all. And it's pretty quickly when I believe that. I was so mad at him the other day because he literally did not want me to buy winter clothes. I keep bringing this up, but I just could not understand why their father would not want them to have winter clothes for the wintertime. And we just moved through it so quickly. The problem was solved in like less than 24 hours because I took full responsibility. He took full responsibility. And then we just compromised and we just moved through it. And it just works.
Well, how great for your kids to see that they don't have to marry someone exactly like them with all the same opinions, that they can still be happy and have a great life with somebody who is different.
Yeah. They see us work through a lot of problems. Like even at the dinner table, we'll get into these disagreements, and just the way we handle it, what you were saying, like, I want my children to see that marriage is fun. That's kind of how we show our kids. You know, you can disagree with your spouse and it kind of be funny and it kind of be amusing, and you work it out. You kind of move through everything and we don't stay mad. And if I am mad, I know it's because of something that I'm making it mean. I never think it's him. I just think it's like, what am I making this mean about me? What am I thinking that's causing me to feel so mad? And that helps me to not stay mad at him, really.
Yeah. I think what a great thing to model for your kids, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think they're thinking, well, what a relief. I don't have to find my clone to marry. I can marry anyone with opinions and ideas and thoughts, and we can still have a great time.
Again, exhale. Oh, relief. I don't have to find my clone.
Yay. I love it. So here's the question I ask all my guests.
And so I'm excited.
I want to ask you, if you had the undivided attention of all the married couples in all the world for just a few minutes, what is the most important thing that you could teach them about how to be happy in any situation?
Well, first of all, if I had all the undivided attention of all the married couples in all the world, that would be amazing. But I would speak to them each individually, because I think this concept is so important to understand as an individual, that each of us, when we're born, we are born with a value that is set at 100%. And since you didn't create you, you cannot change your value. So I would tell them with all the love I could muster up that they don't understand how extraordinary they are. There is nothing you could do that would lower your value or raise it. It just is. And you get to enjoy that. So when you truly believe this, it changes everything. And this is what it does for me. It takes the pressure off of trying to earn value and trying to avoid decreasing my value. And in turn, it creates an environment where I am no longer spending time trying to decide what is right or wrong, but just choosing the experience I want instead.
I wish I had a clapping track. That was so good.
The audience is cheering. dating all the couples.
I love it. That was so good, especially that last line. Can you say that one more time?
Sure. I am no longer spending time trying to decide what is right or wrong, but just choosing the experience I want to have instead.
Yes. So
you're going to clap again.
Yes. So good. I will clap every time I hear you say that. I
think you. Can you just come along with me? Can you just come along with me everywhere I go?
I think that should be your tagline. I think you should throw that up everywhere. It should be synonymous with your name.
Deal.
I love it. Awesome. Okay. Well, do you have any more questions for me or
should Monica? I am just so happy that we could have this conversation. It was so fun. I feel like my day, my week, my month, everything is going to be so much better because I talked to you.
Oh, I love it.
Because you really do bring this like brighter side to everything. So thank you so much.
That was the biggest compliment ever.
I hope that my listeners will head over to your podcast and check out all the wonderful content that you put out there in your part of the world. It really is just a little bright little sunbeam in my life. Every episode you have just adds a little bit of light.
Aww.
And it's really nice. I like it. It's good for me. It's like medicine.
Well, thank you. I could not appreciate you more. Will you tell my listeners where they can find you and all of the great value that you're putting out into the world?
Of course. My podcast is called Coaching with Jamie, and that's Jamie with two E's. So you can head on over there, or you can find me on Instagram at Jamie Andelin.
Well, tell them how it's spelled, and then I'll tell the story of what I thought your name was for the whole time that I ever followed.
Okay, it's Jamee, and then Andelin is Andelin. That's my last name.
I love it. So you can be found on Instagram right there. Okay, so the whole time I've been following you for like a year, I thought your name was Jamie and Elin. Like that was your husband's name or something. It was Jamie and Elin.
Jamie and Elin. Andelin.
I love it. And now I can think of you with the proper name.
That's so good. I'm so grateful to be connected with you. This was so fun to meet up.
Well, have a wonderful afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That was so good, right? Oh my goodness. That episode was so much fun. And I feel like there is so much value in there. So I hope you enjoyed it even a fraction as much as I enjoyed doing that interview. Thank you to all those who participated in the Love Language Challenge. I've gotten great feedback on it, and I hope that those of you who participated are having lots of great luck showing your partner love in their own language as we get closer to the holidays. If you didn't have a chance to join us the first time, you can still join at onthebrightersideofmarriage.com/love-language-challenge. So don't hesitate to do that, and make sure you join us next week for our very special Christmas episode. It's going to be a bit of a tearjerker, so join us next week. And until then, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.